night of total terror, more shattering than your strangest nightmare. What caused the unnatural death, destruction, and panic that night of
Deadpanites? The Energizer Bunny. Just a Joe. Nomad Scry.
And
Retro.
Night of the
Deadpanites.
Kill one, and thousands take their place. What devil creatures growing weight and size every day are hidden behind the eyes of horror? What can stop them? Night of
Jack Mangan's Deadpan Podcast.
From MGM.
Something, 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 something,
something, something, something.
Spatula City! Spatula City!
Hey, welcome to Deadpan number 146. I'm your host, Jack Mangan, a.k.a. The Call of Cthloozer. You know, that's ridiculous. That doesn't even make any sense. In this episode, we have a whole bunch of stuff, actually. So this intro babble is going to end in about 5 seconds, because we have a long interview with Michelle M. Welch, who's a very talented author and editor. She's written the Five Countries series, and she's currently editing the Theme and Variations podcast. And during the interview, I talk way too much, so. But she dispels lots of information in between the parts, you know, where I actually shut the fuck up. We also have the next episode of Duel of the Fates, and we have a new Broken Lyrics challenge, and more stuff. So yes.
Who is it?
Pizza delivery.
Come in.
Hello. Did someone here order a large sausage pizza?
That was me. But I'm more interested in the sausage than the pizza.
Well, baby, let's get it on then.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. Oh, yeah, like that.
Ooh, the sausage is good.
You're not so bad yourself.
Ooh, baby. Mmm. You're listening to Jack Mangan's Deadpan.
He's bringing sexy back.
All right, this week we'll have Jessica Rabbit and Bugs Bunny. As voted by you, they will face off in 5 silly yet, you know, monumentally important categories, and whoever wins the most of the 5 categories will be the duel winner, and they will continue on in the Duel of the Fates tournament. Anyway, first category is who is more iconic between Jessica Rabbit and Bugs Bunny. As soon as the Roger Rabbit movie was released, Jessica Rabbit became the idol and justification for trailer park girls and sluts everywhere. She was the subject of many rear windshield decals, right next to Silly Boys, Trucks Are for Girls, and Calvin Pissing. Women in general seem to embrace her overt and exaggerated sexuality and body even more than men and boys. I don't know, maybe it was for Jessica's cold, willful badness and her shameless disregard of accountability afforded by her va-va-voom looks. I don't know, this might have seemed an empowering fantasy for less traditionally attractive women, while on the other hand being an intimidating over-boner for boys, who had Marvel Comics as safer alternatives, where the unrealistically proportioned, half-naked, mammary vixens complied more easily with standards of good and evil. But Bugs Bunny, he fought and said inspirational racist things during WW2 and was, IMHO, by far the most influential animated character of the 20th century. Buster and Babs in the Space Jam era coated him in an unfunny, commercialized, hyper-mainstream sheen, which has simultaneously damaged and increased his cultural significance. Bugs for icon. All right, out of these two, who'd win in a fight? Neither one of these two are fighters. In fact, Bugs' specialty is in using his moxie to trick opponents out of fights. We don't see Jessica Rabbit in any brawls, but, like any hot, manipulative chick, She's got some raging, crazy-ass fire deep within her. And besides, most guys she beat up would thoroughly enjoy it. Jessica wins the fight category. All right, we'll come back after the break with the love prowess category. And who better to read the love prowess for Jessica Rabbit and Bugs Bunny than the Energizer Bunny? So come back for that, or stay tuned for that. Let's frickin' podcast.
Go ahead and run. Run home and cry. I'm
Jack Mangan.
Well, I guess it's been a while since I've had an interview on Deadpan, but here I am, and I'm actually very honored to have someone who has actually become a friend of mine, but who, you know, for years has always been and still is a superstar of the Arizona sci-fi convention scene. Everyone's like, oh, there's Michelle M. Welch. So how's that for an intro for you, Michelle?
I'm a superstar?
Yes,
I didn't know I was a superstar.
Yes, you're a superstar.
Wow. I should get you to write my cover blurbs.
Okay, I'll do that. So, we'll talk to your publisher. But anyway, yeah. And you are a superstar in these realms, and also outside of these realms, of course. You have these trilogy of novels that have been published with a major. What is the major publisher?
Well, it's funny you should say that because I'm not sure they're technically around anymore, but they were part of that reorganization that happened a little while ago. But they came out from Bantam Spectra.
Oh, okay. You know, actually, I didn't realize that they went the way of the Pontiac.
Spectra got rolled back into Random House, although there are still some books coming out with the Spectra imprint on them, but I don't know if it was something, you know, contracts that were in place before that change. I'm not real clear on that, but yeah, they did come out for Bantam Spectra. That was 2003, 2004, and 2005. So.
Okay, excellent. And the name of this trilogy, I know the names of the books, but is there a name of the trilogy?
That is kind of funny. I never named the trilogy. The publisher never named the trilogy, but Amazon started calling it Five Countries, so that became the default name for the series.
Okay, so you just kind of went with it, like, okay, you know, whatever.
Nobody cared enough to tell them to stop. Amazon does have an interesting history of errors with my books.
Really?
Yeah, I had I did a name change after I signed the contract, but well before Confidence Game was published. Mm-hmm. And I didn't realize that the publisher had registered the ISBN right away, which meant that it got listed. It could be listed on places like Amazon right away, and they had it under the old name. And that was difficult to change. That was very difficult for them to get changed. They had me listed under both names for a while.
Oh, well, I wonder. No, I guess I can't help in any way. But so that's all been ironed out, though. Everything.
Oh, that was ironed out. Yeah, that was ironed out before the publication date. But it's Amazon is sometimes interesting.
Yeah, I think, you know, as for the consumer side, I think Amazon's always been, people are generally happy. But I know that there have been all kinds of strangeness. Well, I guess most people are happy. People who had copies of 1984 probably weren't too happy with Amazon recently. But
on the Kindle, not so much.
Yeah, yeah, right. Well, and, you know, I have a copy of Confidence Game, which, of course, is the first in the series, and I do look forward to checking it out. I mean, the less common position of, I've read a lot of your shorter stuff, your shorter material, so I'm familiar with your writing style and your ability, but I've yet to dive into, you know, your at least what kind of put you on the map. So I look forward to going through those. I guess people, it is kind of dark fantasy, which that, I mean, that seems to surprise people a little bit. I guess they're kind of expecting, you know, elves kind of dancing around and singing and not really prepared for just the fact that it's, I mean, I wouldn't say it's China medieval dark, but it is a little bit edgier.
Yeah, I get that reaction a lot. People say, oh, what do you write? And I say, I write fantasy. And everybody says, oh, you know, I don't like those elves and all that, you know, dragons and all that stuff. I'm like, well, you know, I don't really, I'm not a fan of all that stuff either, which is why I don't write it. Funny about the dark fantasy tag, that was actually written into my contract. It said a dark fantasy. So I started describing it as a dark fantasy, not realizing that when most people refer to dark fantasy, they mean vampires and werewolves.
No.
So people started expecting my book to have vampires and werewolves, and it didn't have those either.
Well, I mean, maybe that'll help the sales. You can just put some some sparkly people with kind of pointy canine teeth on the cover. And
that's what I'm missing. That's Everybody right. told me I was missing BDSM. That was what was wrong with my book.
Although there is, you know, PG-rated nudity on the covers, right? You actually, I'd say that in jest, but you actually got a pretty pretty renowned cover artist, right? That
was Yeah. John Jude Palancar did the art for all three books, and it is lovely, lovely artwork. Right. And you can tell that the art department made a conscious effort to make this book look like the Jacqueline Carey Kuchiel's books, which, you know, of course moves copies because, you know, good artwork makes people think, ooh, I liked that book, I'll like this book. However, it might not have been the most accurate comparison to make because my books aren't actually like Kuchiel's, the Kuchiel books.
Right.
So some people were still expecting something different. There's no elves, there's no werewolves, there's no handcuffs. What's going on?
That's right. That's for book four. You need to have like elves and dwarves, like in handcuffs, like BDSM elves and dwarves. That would work.
That's an angle I hadn't considered.
Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, I know some people out there have picked up Confidence Games, some people in the Deadpan community. So I look forward to reading it and, you know, and talking about it with them and actually with you. I know it's been a while since you wrote the stuff, but I'll grill you on you know what happens on page 346.
Oh dear.
But I can't do that yet. But I can actually talk to you about you have some other interesting projects going on, and the one that that was kind of our focus for this conversation was the Theme and Variations compilation, which actually, you know, I'm in, but I'm not, you know, there are lots of really excellent authors and exciting stories here.
Yes, Theme and Variations is a podcast anthology of short fiction with music as a theme. The writers group that we're in, had several stories come through that were music stories. They were about music or about musicians or had music as a theme. And I was just so excited. And I said to myself, you know, I want to do an anthology of music stories. And then I said to myself, oh, I can do an anthology of music stories. I can podcast it. So I talked to some people in the local writers group, and I also talked to some people in the online writers group Codex, and I got a decent amount of interest, and I got 9 stories. They're appearing as 8 episodes with 2 flash stories in a single episode. All the authors read their own story, and there's a lot of really neat stuff there.
Okay, and let's do a... An author roll call.
Do you want author and story roll call?
Whatever works best to drum up interest. And, you know, we can kill time so you can bring up the list. No, I'm just kidding. Okay. I'm sure you know it by now, right?
I did bring up the list just so I didn't have a brain fart and completely forget somebody who would hate me forever afterwards. First episode is a story by Lon Prater. Prelude to a Theme by Dougie Franz. That actually is a reprint. It appeared in a recent issue of Spacesuits and Six Guns. Second story is by Rick Novi, another local author. That story is Black Orchid. Third story is by Caroline Rhodes. Post-apocalyptic guitar in G minor. Nice little story that featured something I really hoped for, although I didn't actually express it exactly, but it happened anyway, which was a cooperative work between the author and a certain musician we know. you arranged and performed her song that she wrote, right, which I thought was way cool.
I'm sorry, I gotta jump in and tell you, I guess I don't know if everyone knows that story, and I think you've heard how that came to be, but yeah, Carolyn Rhodes is also part of our writers group, and she and I had started talking about, she had the story and it had a song in it, and she asked me if I would be interested in doing, you know, the music for this, and so we kind of exchanged some conversations, and The way she got me the tune was, you know, she had the lyrics, but she called my voicemail line and recorded herself singing what the melody would be. So I just picked it up from there. I just kind of listened to her voicemail, and that's how the song was written. That's why, you know, she certainly created the song. I mean, really all I did was, as you said, I kind of arranged, I took what she gave me, and, you know, it was her melody and her words. I just actually put it on an actual instrument and just transcribed it from there. But it was, I'd never created a song like that, so it was a kind of a funny and fun way to do it. And I'm sure it must have been really awkward for her to call my voicemail, you know, and basically sing into an answering machine and trust me not to, you know, put it out there for the whole world to hear on my podcast.
That was great. I had heard that story, though. I like that. That's fun. The fourth story, the fourth week, is Song for the Sea by Elaine Isaac, and that's actually a prequel story to her trilogy of fantasy novels. Week five is your story, 12 Bar Blues, which mm-hmm. you contributed some more music to, even though you originally told me you weren't gonna.
It just needed it. It needed it.
Week six is the Flash episode, two short pieces, one by Kean Bowes, who's one of the Codex authors. That's called She Shall Have Music. And the other Flash piece is by LeJean, better known as some guy from Chandler, which is called Nell. My story is in week seven. That's Serenade. And then the last episode is by Ernest Hogan, one of our local writers, who actually heard about the project and decided he was interested. And that is The Rise and Fall of Paco Cohen and the Mariachis of Mars, which did appear in an issue of Analog in 2001.
Hello, this is Amy Bowen. You're listening to Jack Mangan's Deadpan Podcast. Deadpan is the way.
Love prowess. They both look pretty alluring in an evening dress, but Bug's primary suitors are a weird little hairy cowboy who appears on mudflaps and a wabicidable adult Charlie Brown with a speech impediment. I'm pretty sure no one has ever touched themselves looking at Bugs Bunny. At least I sure hope not. Only slightly less disturbing, there probably have been those who have touched themselves fantasizing about playing patty cake with Jessica Rabbit. But then, hey, you never know. Maybe I have, too. Now, my thought. You are wrong. Sorry, Jack, but I think you're wrong. Having Jessica Rabbit win is a gimme. That takes, like, no thought at all. I mean, she just has to stand there and look pretty, and she's got love prowess. Bugs actually has to work at it. And Bugs actually, besides Yosemite Sam and Elmer Fudd, has had a few female suitors, has had the Tasmanian Devil go after him. He's actually even tried to make out with dynamite in the shape of a rabbit in an evening gown. Now that takes talent. When you think about Jessica Rabbit, it's actually Roger who has more love prowess, who can attract someone like her. Whereas Bugs, he's a multiracial, multi-species. He's not fussy. He loves everybody. So in my mind, love prowess actually goes to Bugs. So you had to work harder on that one, and I disagree. But that's okay. I'd give it to you anyways. Thanks, Jack. Bye.
There you go, you see? Deadpan and Duel of the Fates, it's controversial. It's edgy. All right. The rotating category. Who'd make the better unfathomable, sanity-draining, Lovecraftian elder god? From the darkness of time and from beyond the abyss of space, traveled across dimensions of pure horror and decayed souls. I'm sure some hentai artist has already drawn Jessica Rabbit with tentacles, or tangled in disturbing ways with tentacles. Hell, as drawn, her boobs were practically extra appendages anyway. She could have said, I'm not the ultimate evil slumbering beneath the sea, I'm just drawn that way. But no matter how unbearable she became,
Didn't Bugs Bunny already defeat a Lovecraftian nightmare in Gossamer, the big orange fuzzy monster? He even gave him a manicure. He rotates and wins. And so we're tied at two categories apiece, and we'll come back after the break to hit up the fifth and final, the intangibles, to see who wins this duel.
Lopan. Curse you.
And we know what's cool is that I've heard of everyone in my writer's group. I mean, my mind isn't that far gone yet, but I mean, everyone else in that group has a reputation. Every one of them, you know, I've at least heard the name. I know it's a really good series. I know, you know, maybe with the exception of that 12 Bar Blues one, but I will say, I'll take a minute since it's Deadpan, I'll take a minute to say I am a little uncertain. And actually, I expressed this to you because I really enjoy this story, you know, for my own work, you know, as much as you can and separate yourself and enjoy your own work. I really like this story, 12 Bar Blues. For me, this one is more about the writing. I was really kind of in a little bit of a Steinbeck moment, so I was really trying to recreate that kind of thing, and I was really getting into the prose itself, the writing itself. So it was more that than kind of a compelling yarn where, you know, you're on the edge of your seat wondering if James Bond is going to, you know, survive the harrowing fight in the edge of the cliff.
There's some shooting in it.
Yeah, that's true. There's a gun in the story.
There's a gun involved.
That's right. That's the end of my vanity and my insecurity about the stuff.
All right.
But now this has gotten some interest so far, and as I understand, and it's gotten some good feedback. And I know that this is actually available not only through the website, the Theme and Variations podcast website, right? That is the URL, right?
It's themeandvariationsanthology.com.
That's what I'm sorry. Yeah.
Dang.
Switch out podcast and replace it with anthology. Themeandvariationsanthology.com.
Yeah.
And it's also a patio book.
Yes.
So you know, if those of you who are patio books fans can go over and get it there.
Yeah, and in fact, because the audiobook schedule is a little bit different because you have to upload a set of episodes and it has to go through quality control, they actually got the episodes faster because I was trying to balance the schedule and figure out when to line them up. I had the silly idea that they would line up at exactly the same time, which is very silly of me. to expect everybody else, expect the entire world to follow my timeline. The entire world is not following my timeline, so they are not coming out on exactly the same schedule. You will get most of the episodes a little bit earlier at Podiobooks. However, if you come over to my website, if you come over to themeandvariationsanthology.com, you actually get all the links to all the authors' websites, and you get all the credits. You can find out where all the sound effects and everything came from. And
patio books often—that's part of the appeal—is that, you know, you can kind of trim out the chatter, the babble, the intro babble and outro babble. And patio books may or may not have done that with this one. I don't know because I haven't heard the patio books versions.
Yeah, I haven't listened to all of the episodes.
Well, you should. It's
just probably bad of me. Yeah, I really should. Oops.
And I'm curious. I actually have a question for you. What did you use?
Yes.
Are you just hosting the files, or did you use some kind of a pod, something like Libsyn to upload them, or are you just hosting them and kind of posting links?
I'm hosting them. I've got. I am using PowerPress. I'm running PowerPress on WordPress.
Okay. Well, cool. I was just curious, actually, if what your strategy was for something like this that's got a limited number of episodes.
Yeah.
Although I've heard rumors, and you know, we can delete this if it turns out to be untrue, but I've heard rumors that there may be a future for this anthology beyond Ernest. There's life beyond Ernest, maybe?
Life behind Ernest. I've heard rumors about that, too. Yeah, I did hear a suggestion from other podcasters that if I get a following, I should take advantage of this following. And continue to give them content to listen to. So I've put out a call to some of my authors and some other people and said, "Yeah, hey, can you all keep writing stories? And maybe I can put something out once a month beyond my original 8 episodes. So hopefully I will get the content, and hopefully I will be able to put out a story a month starting in January.
Although I guess we should clarify so you don't get flooded with emails, that that's still, at the moment, still an invitation only, right?
It is currently an invitation, yeah. I'm still looking at the people I started with, the local writers group, the Codex writers group, a couple other people I've contacted.
Right. That is an entirely different endeavor than you know, actually reading slush and that kind of, I mean, I've had some slush editors on, and I've talked to slush editors outside of, you know, why they're rejecting my story, and it's generally, it's a really consuming thing, so that would be a huge change. So
I actually did a little bit of slush reading once. A friend of mine he published a small press, started off as a poetry chapbook, and then he decided he wanted to start publishing fiction. And for his first fiction issue, he asked me to read a slush. So he gave me this gigantic box of manuscripts in it. And of course, this was in the 90s, so, you know, people weren't really sending email submissions around. They were all print submissions. And I got to sit there with a giant box for like a week going through this box, trying to find two stories that I could recommend to him to publish.
Yeah, so it was the grueling task that it appears to be. Huh?
It was mighty grueling, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, well, then that is excellent that there is going to be life beyond Ernest, possibly. I mean, maybe not right away, but that there will probably be more. Because I think it's actually a great idea. And I like the way that you've kind of mixed it up, that there is original music, and, you know, there's... Actually, I have music in 3 of them, so I like that.
Yeah.
Not like I'm getting paid, but, you know, I just like the attention. But, you know, I have music in Ernest's story as well. But
yes.
But I think it's cool.
And that's, the theme music.
Well, right, yeah.
Music for theme and variations.
That's right, and I've played that and gotten good feedback about that. And so, well, now what do you have... do you have anything on the horizon? I mean, I know the theme and variations has taken up a lot of your focus, and of course there is always the trilogy to push. But you know, what do you definitely have your fans out there? What can your fans look forward to in the days or months or years or whatever, however far ahead you want to go?
However far ahead I want to go. I'll have to draw a distinction between anything definite coming out and pure wild speculation. I do have a couple of definites coming out. I sold two short stories. One of them is to Embrain SF, which is an online publication. They publish a monthly PDF issue, and I think they also periodically make a print edition of a set of their monthly issues, and that you can buy through, put it out through Lulu or something.
Okay.
I am in issue 12. I think it's issue number 12. It's coming out in January. I have a science fiction short story coming out in that. Obviously, Embrain SF.
Right.
Obviously. I also sold a story to Realms of Fantasy. Happily, Realms of Fantasy came back from near death, and
right.
I'm not sure which issue that will appear in yet, because it was only recently we got the definite answer on that. So I'm waiting for more news on exactly when that will happen. That story is actually a 5 countries tie-in, and I actually wrote it in between the publication of the second and third books. And I'm surprised that when you write short stories, sometimes you write them and you forget about them, because right. Then you have another idea you move on to. And I hadn't realize, I sort of forgot about this story, and I hadn't realized that my agent really liked this story. She said it really resonated with her, and she was working really hard to find a home for it. And then out of the blue, she says, oh, yeah, Realms of Fantasy is interested in this story. And I had to think for a minute, because Shauna McCarthy actually asked for a small rewrite at the end. Sometimes I go through these phases writing short stories, one of my experimental prose phases, and this is a bit of an experimental prose story, but in my short stories, I tend to like ambiguous endings, and Shauna asked me to make the ending a tad less ambiguous. She said, well, I assume the character is going to this location at the end. And I said to myself, I have no idea where she's going. I had to go back and reread it because I couldn't remember.
Right. But, you know, that can work. I'm completely okay with that.
Yeah. But, yeah, it is a Five Countries tie-in, although you won't recognize it. There are just a couple of references that you might pick up on. It does take place several hundred years before Confidence Game.
Okay. Well, then, there's encouragement for me to kind of get going with reading Confidence Game. I said, that's next up in my reading queue.
Excellent.
And I look forward, you know, even though I don't want to read anything about those elves and all that stuff, but I'll still read Confidence Game. Well, this has all been good stuff, and I look forward to I see you all the time at our writers group.
Yes.
but you know, I mean, our friends and your fans can run into you, you know, being a superstar at the local conventions usually, right?
Yes.
In fact, all right, well, I definitely want to thank you for taking the time to come on here and talk to me and to talk about the podcast. I think mine comes out the week after Thanksgiving, I believe, right?
No, yours comes out this week. Yours is the 25th, November 25th.
Oh, well, then it's out right now then, because this is a... Yeah, that comes out the same time as this. So there you go.
The magic podcasting. We have gone forward in time.
That's right.
Yeah
we're science fiction podcasters. That's how that works. But
yes.
But yeah, so there you go. So my story, you can judge for yourself if it's just a load of crap or if it's, or as Steinbeck called it, a load of hoopty-doodle. you know, even if you decide that mine is a total piece of crap, then you should listen to the other ones because, you know, I've been listening so far, and so far everything's been really tight. And of course, I'm familiar with some of the other stuff that's still to come. So I know, and the author is still to come. So I know that you're in for a treat, everyone else. And again, you know, Michelle, I want to thank you for coming on. And you and maybe that guy from Chandler, you guys should come on here again sometime. And we'll maybe just come on just for kind of fun instead of, you know, without having anything to pimp.
Well, we should at least come on and say deadpan is the way.
Thank you, Michelle. Michelle and Welch.
You are listening to Jack Mangan's Deadpan Podcast. Deadpan is a motherfucking wee. All rocks destroyed in the making of this bumper deserved it.
There's a sec here. I'm moving this chair. Wow.
All right, so here we're thinking about putting some, like, noises like pots and pans and maybe breaking glass and maybe a surprised cat. You can't go wrong with a surprised cat.
Yeah. Oh no, we like some all broken.
Well, I'll just put them back in order.
I don't know which ones are which.
I know. I'll ask the deadpan.
I'm helping you.
You're helping me?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So,
what?
Last week we gave them three challenges. Did you know that?
Yeah.
Three challenges?
Yeah. Okay. I'll hold this.
You're going to hold that?
Yeah.
Okay. So, anyways, the first one was Nihilism knocked three times on the ceiling, but the rosy fingers of dawn always inserted themselves into the nose of unfulfilled promises. Well, that one was probably a little tough for folks. Jack Mangan got the artist Correct. When he guessed King Missile. That is from their Happy Hour LP. That also had that other song on it. That I guess I can't say. And this song is called Ed.
Ed.
Ed, that's right. The second one was Beneath the Stains of Time, the Feelings Disappear. You know which one that is?
That one.
No, I'm afraid that not. One. No. It was Nine Inch Nails.
It's Nine Inch Nails.
That's right. And the song was Hurt.
And the song was Hurt?
Yes. Don't put your finger in that hole, please.
Well, it's broken.
It is broken a little bit. Okay. And Jack Mangan had the artist and title correct on that one.
So, Pam, I'm here.
Yeah, on there. Okay. And finally, the lyric was, oh, there's no place that you can go, you think you can run, but... And you know who that was?
Yeah.
Really? Who?
Who?
Who? Okay. It was Big Audio Dynamite 2.
Big Audio Dynamite 2?
2, yeah. You got some of the syllables there. And the song was called I Don't Know. It was actually the what comes right after the but was I Don't Know.
I don't know? Oh.
You think you can run, but I don't know.
I don't know? Okay.
You don't know the power of a
deadpan. If only Bugs had a GPS unit to help with directions around Albuquerque. Who hasn't, at some point in their life, taken a bite of a raw carrot and said,
"What's up, Doc?"
He pioneered the word meh as a term to denote bored disdain. I really, really wish I could wake up this Saturday morning, fill a bowl of marshmallowy cereal to the brim, and walk carefully into the living room to waste away the morning watching Bugs Bunny cartoons, quietly hoping for the Marvin the Martian episode. The cereal would be Trix, by the way, chased with a glass of disgusting strawberry quick, at around Easter time, while reading Watership Down. Bugs is so many things to me as a kid, including my first introduction to opera music. Bugs easily wins the intangibles. And Bugs comes from behind to defeat Jessica Rabbit and move on to face either Bilbo Baggins or Buzz Lightyear in DOTF Round 2.
Am I a stinker?
Sorry, JR, I know you have a thing for rabbit comedians, so I hope that's some consolation. And I am talking to a fictional animated character. Next week on Duel of the Fates, Rorschach versus Otto.
All right, so this week we have new challenges. Mm-hmm. All right, this week we've got 3 lyrics.
Yeah.
All right, tell me that I'm doing number 1.
Okay.
Wait, number 1.
Number 1.
Okay, here goes. She said it's hard for me to see how one little boy got so ugly. All right, now number 2.
2,
okay. If you want to view paradise, simply look around and view it.
Okay, now which one?
All right, now 3.
3.
Okay, 3.
3.
Before you fall, you have to learn to crawl. You can't see heaven when you're standing tall.
Hey, Dad, we found it.
3, yeah, no, 3's over here, too. Okay, so those are the 3 challenges. Now go baste your turkey. Good luck.
Bye-bye. Okay, now turn the page.
Well, did you figure them all out? Go to the comments page for this episode and show off. Deadpan is the motherfucking way. Bed music for this segment is Mysterious Mirror by Porchcat, found at ccmixter.org. And now back to your regularly scheduled deadpan.
Alright, excellent job by Fox Mackey doing those lyrics there. And I don't know any of them. But I'll listen again. I actually I'm putting this show together. Anyway, speaking of the show, all right, Fox should stop listening right now. Give him a couple of seconds. All right. Holy crap, this is the longest fucking episode ever. So let's cruise through this outro babble. Yes, no, or yes, no, yes. There were no stolen comments this week because it's the longest frickin' episode ever. I want to thank everyone who helped me to put this one together, and I do want to encourage you to go out and check out my story that is in Michelle's Theme and Variations Anthology podcast. And actually, I really do want to encourage you to go and check out the other ones. Her story is excellent, and really, there isn't a bad one in the bunch. Yes, and also you should know, there's a Duel of the Fates, one more thing here in the outro babble, so wait, hold on. Okay. Alright, in this Duel of the Fates, this was originally scripted so that Jessica Rabbit was going to win. The reason she did not is because she had actually zero supporters, and Bugs Bunny has a supporter, so that is what drove him over the top. In none of the duels where there's a character who has no one supporting them, are they ever going to win, if that made sense. Anyway, I'm going to stop outro babbling because it is late, and yes, that's exactly why I'm going to stop outro babbling. But thank you for being a part of Deadpan. Things have been a little quiet lately, so I'd appreciate some stories, some stolen lyrics, some content, some dumbass memories. You can call them into the voicemail line, 206-350-TOMI, 206-350-8664. Or just email them to me, that's sphericaljackm@gmail.com. And yes, this is releasing on Thanksgiving, so you may be hearing this after the fact. I know that screws everything up. But I hope if you're in the U.S. that, or if you observe Thanksgiving, I hope that you enjoyed it. All right, going to close out with some music. This is actually taken from the PodCamp AZ live performance that I did with my friend Lee, who's an amazing bass player, as you're going to hear in a second. And I want to thank Dan and CJ of Love Long and Prosper for snagging this music and for just doing a great job hosting that whole room and running the live stuff. And all right, no more outro babble. There is stuff coming up after the music. Not me. I'm not coming back after the music, but something else is. So yes, this episode just goes on and on. But you know what? The stuff after the music is funny. So you should check it out. All right, Deadpan is the way. Yeah, thank you for listening. Bye. Thank you.
Love prowess. Love prowess. Okay, now the silliness. I'll do just an excerpt. I won't do the whole thing. In the bunny character that I do for Amy Bowen. Because that would be like, love prowess. Well, they both look pretty alluring in an evening dress. But Bugs's primary suitors are a weird little hairy cowboy who appears on mud flaps and a webicidable adult Charlie Brown with a speech impediment.
Did someone here order a large sausage pizza?